Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with co-host Alan Phillips, attorney at law from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Today is April 26, 2012. Thank you so much for tuning in, listening to these free educational broadcasts, becoming part of the advocacy in keeping yourself healthy, your family, your friends, and community healthy, and learning about the vaccination issues that are going on in the United States, which really transfer to international information. So we're going to welcome Alan today, and I think he's on the line. Can you hear me?
I can. How are you doing today, Debbie?
Doing great. We just finished up a great introduction to homeopathy with Dr. Christina Chambrow, and all about the upcoming classes she has, and we're constantly learning. And no matter how many times I listen to the basic information, it always reaffirms what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, because homeopathy is a different way of viewing health, a different way of taking care of ourselves through natural, holistic methods. And so today, we have a whole bunch of news articles to review. I want to just ask the folks who are listening to don't keep it to yourself. Share this stuff with your friends. Use your share button for Facebook, Dig, StumbleUpon, MySpace. Copy the embed code from the shows when they're over and put them right onto your website. Click onto the Twitter button right now or Facebook and tell other people to join us. We have a live chat, and people can shoot us a comment or a question or call in and tell us what they're thinking right now about all of these issues, because it is some way that we create this community and take action. So I'm going to let you get us started with the discussion today.
Thank you, Debbie. I thought what I would do first today, Debbie, is give just a quick update on what's going on legislatively around the country. And there is a long list of pending bills in states around the country pertaining to vaccines, and I'm not going to attempt to address all of them, but just a couple of ones that I've been more directly involved in personally, and that we've talked about in recent shows. But folks can go to the NVIC's advocacy portal, and that URL is the letters NVIC followed by the word advocacy, ADVOCACY, I think I'm spelling that right, .org, or just search the internet for NVIC advocacy, and that'll take you right to it as well. You can sign up for free there. That's the National Vaccine Information Center. They've created this wonderful website and tool that is now on internet servers with at Mercola.com. So they have teamed up to provide this service, free service to folks, where you can keep up with what's going on legislatively as it pertains to vaccines in your state, and then it has built-in mechanisms to get you directly to your state representatives, information, names, contact, and so forth. So it's really a well designed. Don Richardson, an NVIC person heading up this program, and her husband spent 11 months developing this tool, the software for this, and it's just really wonderful and brilliant tool. So I recommend that people join that if they haven't already, and tune into it periodically to see what's going on in your state. But real quick, we've talked a lot about a bill in Vermont that was introduced, I think, or according to the legislative history at the Vermont Legislature website, was first the first action on it was in January, early January this year. It did pass the Senate. It's a bill to remove the philosophical exemption to immunizations in Vermont. It has been a very controversial bill. Had been some heated discussions on that one. I even had the privilege and opportunity to speak by phone to the House Healthcare Committee along with many other people, and presented some information, well-documented information directly contrary to some of the commonly held beliefs and assumptions about vaccines, to see if I could the goal was not to stir the pot per se, but I'm sure that's what happened, at least a little bit. But this particular bill has gone through a long list of actions, including numerous amendments, and the very latest thing listed on the Vermont Legislature's website on this bill was that on the 19th, this was sent back. There was a proposed amendment, and the proposed amendment did not have concurrence, and so there was a committee of conference appointed. And the Speaker of the House of Representatives appointed some members of the committee conference. So this bill seems to be struggling to get through the House. It got through the Senate very quickly, but it's been struggling. But I looked at some of the amendments, and Debbie, if I read this correctly, the last version that I saw that I looked at a few days ago, very recently, when a contact of mine in Vermont emailed this to me, it looked like they're trying, among other things, to require schools to make public what their particular immunization rates are. There was even something in there, in one version of this, if I read it correctly, suggesting that if you were uncomfortable with your school's low immunization rate, you could go take your child and put them in another school that has a higher immunization rate. I mean, they're really stretching to try and victimize and persecute people who don't want to vaccinate, who are really doing anything and everything they can to just discourage this, you know.
Well, it's also sounding as if, you know, their way of giving vaccinations is the answer to preventing disease, where we are learning in every medical avenue that I am visiting, that is not the answer. And the accumulation of more and more vaccines as the, you know, the antibiotic solution. You know, the antibiotics was the solution to disease at one point, and now they're finding that is not true. And the same thing is happening in the world of vaccinations, the development and research and development of vaccines to target everything from obesity to diabetes to cancer to whooping cough, so whatever it is. And in actuality, the vaccines are not really helping to alleviate and annihilate these diseases. And yet this is the message that they send out.
And what's sort of interesting, and interesting is a polite word, because I'm actually, my impulse is to use more emotion-packed words, but I'll use the word interest here. It's interesting that the House of Representatives' response in the State House in Vermont to the opposition to this bill has been a series of different amendments that haven't seemed to really get anywhere, but the amendments are not in any obvious way that I've seen at all designed to take into account the concerns of the opposition. What they have been is just one version or idea of another about how to restrict or discourage or limit people exercising the exemption. So they're not hearing what we're saying. To make a long story short, you know, they have danced back and forth with this idea of having a requirement that you get a signature from a doctor like they did in Washington State, you know, last year. And it's clear that the people working on the bill and the amendments have a very one-sided agenda that is they're not ignoring the concerns because they keep trying to do amendments and changes, but they're not hearing the concerns because the changes don't reflect any recognition of what the concerns, the information in the concerns.
Right. I think that this is a new tactic across the board, that those who are in control are using the silent method, the silent treatment that, you know, you've probably grown up with at some point or another, that if you're ignored, then you will just go away and you will eventually disappear and not be heard and you will give up. And they do that even, or they give lip service to say, yes, okay, hand in your comments or put forth your, vocalize what you want to say at the microphone, but then we will just brush you away and dismiss you. And okay, so we can say we heard it, but we're not taking any action. So it's the action that really proves that something has been heard or not. And I like the way that it's called the NVIC, the National Vaccine Advocacy Portal, so advocacy to me is showing that there has been action taken. So do we want to go ahead with our news reporting?
Well, just a couple of brief updates in other states that we've been talking about recently. We've talked at length recently about California's bill, AB number 2109, that would require people exercising non-medical exemptions to get a lecture and signature from a medical doctor. And as we found in Washington State, I've actually heard people from reports from two ends of the spectrum. One end is that some people are getting signatures from a doctor that might not even be a proper doctor, a chiropractor or somebody who signs it doctor so-and-so, and people are accepting those. And there seems to, you know, the ability to really track and check behind people on this seems to be limited. So a lot of people are finding it not real difficult. But a lot of people are finding it exceedingly difficult. They can't find a doctor who will actually sign these forms, or they're charging exorbitant amounts of money to give the lecture and sign the form. I had at least one person report to me. They were told $400. So the idea of having a doctor signature on the notion that, well, we want to make sure you're making an informed choice so that you have, you know, the doctor's authoritative information before you get the exemption. However sincere or not, in practice, it just doesn't work that way. Doctors will use this as an opportunity to refuse to cooperate or to strongly discourage by just charging high prices. The last information on the California website this morning is that on the 23rd, it was read the second time. Let me see if I see which chamber they're talking about here. In any case, it was amended, so I'm not sure what the amendment was, and I want to go back and see if I can get more information
on
that later. But
what was amended?
This bill in California that's wants to require a doctor's a doctor's signature and so forth. So I don't know what the amendment is about, but anyway, it's been referred back to a committee. So this one is starting to take on some more a more convoluted path than it might have, as opposed to just going straight through as introduced. So we'll have to, you know, follow this and see where it goes. And just real briefly, we had talked at length last week in particular about a bill in New York that would allow children to consent to vaccines for sexually transmissible diseases, in particular that would be the HPV and hepatitis B, without parents' consent. And as we've discussed perhaps ad nauseum at this point in several past shows about this particular bill or other similar bills and laws, blatantly unconstitutional. This bill, according to the...
So what happened to that bill in New York?
Well, according to the State Assembly webpage, it was introduced actually originally in January of 2011 and again January this year, and it's been referred to health, which I assume means, you know, a health committee. Doesn't look like, at least in terms of what's posted, that there's really been any other action on it, but it is out there. So people in New York need to be aware of that and pay attention to what's going on, let their representatives know if they disagree with this. As I've said in the past, Debbie, where I think there are serious legal questions as opposed to only the ethical and moral ones, I get more directly involved with the vaccine legislation or bills and laws as I become aware of them around the country. And I've got a page on the vaccinerights.com website where I have a list of legislative projects. So I've written legal memorandums in support of opposition to the California, New York bills, to the North Carolina law. And I'll just put out briefly, if I may, anyone here in North Carolina or who knows anyone here in North Carolina who's willing to meet with a state representative, get in touch with me about the law here in North Carolina that allows children to consent to vaccines. I have a lengthy legal memorandum on that issue, and we need to be meeting, though, with our state representatives here in North Carolina. I'm happy to meet with anybody and their local representative. I've already met with mine, and does not appear to be getting the job done. So we need to meet with some other representatives. So
you're saying we're having the same issue that New York is having with regard to allowing children to consent to vaccines without the parent knowing what their decision is, and they could come home and say, guess what, Mom or Dad, I just had my vaccine today.
New York has a pending bill that, if passed, would become a law that would allow that. North Carolina has a law on the books that allows children of any age, from day of birth till the day you turn 18, to consent to not only any vaccine, but to a wide range of other health care. And so we need to have that law repealed or profoundly modified or amended.
We let this pass through. When did we allow that to happen?
Well, if I understand correctly, because somebody asked me that earlier and I realized I didn't know, I assumed it was something that was recently passed because I hadn't heard about it before. It looks like, if I'm reading the legislative history correctly, that the original version of this law was passed in the early 70s. So who knows? But regardless at this point, the fact is that the U.S. Supreme Court has said that children, not even teenagers, can make medical decisions for themselves and that parents have to do that. I don't want to get into a lengthy discussion because I want to get on to the news things, but I just will say briefly that the pretense on which this law was passed, having to do with getting medical care for abused children, which is an absolutely wonderful and honorable goal and intent, happens to be covered by other law. We don't need this child consent law to address that issue. There have been perhaps some issues with whether or not the local departments of social services can address all of the abuse that goes on in their respective jurisdictions or counties, but you don't fix that kind of a problem by violating all parents' rights in the state and thumbing your nose at the Constitution and the U.S. Supreme Court, despite the fact that my state senator deliberately took that position when I brought this issue to her attention. It was very disturbing. Nope, can't deal with that. We have UNC hospitals in our district, but here, go take this to this Republican. My state senator's a Democrat. Here, go talk to this Republican. He's into that constitutional stuff. Well, excuse me, Senator, but you took an oath to uphold the state and federal constitution when you came into this job. And by saying you have no interest in the fact that this violates state and federal constitutions, to me is either literally or the equivalent of violating your oath.
Alan, you cannot, your one tiny voice is not going to sway certain people who have their ears closed or have their hands over their ears, eyes, and mouth, whatever it is, and they're just not listening, and maybe they are feeling so overwhelmed with the amount of work that they have to do that they're not going to go into something that is such a heavy topic when they've got so much else on their plate. So, we're going to have to get you more support. Find folks who are concerned about this issue of freedoms and rights, health issues, and get people to back you up and go en masse rather than just one lone voice. Okay.
Sometimes a lone voice makes a difference, and I've seen that happen at the state level and even the federal level. But at the same time, I have been and continue to work on building the Pandemic Response Project and its professional panel, which, and when I go to meet with state representatives or state officials, I do carry with me a growing body of medical, healthcare, and other professionals who support my position. And by the way, we're working furiously to try and expand the membership of that professional panel. So anybody who's a professional, healthcare is great, but even any other kind of professional who wants to lend their support to vaccine freedom of choice and to declare that in support of the work that I'm doing is invited to contact me about being listed on our professional panel.
And the best way to contact you is?
Let's just say go to vaccinerights.com, because at the bottom of every page is phone number and address and email address. Vaccinerights.com. You can get a hold of me there.
Excellent. Okay, so now...
So onto the news?
Yeah. Well, but it was important what we spoke about because these issues are going on right now, and people need to know what's happening. Okay, so doctors change names of diseases when the vaccines don't work. And this is something you've been talking about for 2 years with me.
And I discovered it very early in my research, general research into the vaccine controversy, now going on the order of 18 or more years ago. I was reading an information that as early as problems during the smallpox, that when a vaccinated person came up with a disease, and this happened as far back as with smallpox 100 or more years ago, if the person was vaccinated, the doctor comes up with another diagnosis. They just... by definition, since you're vaccinated, this can't be what it looks like, so we'll have to call it something else. So this is not a new phenomenon. It's been going on for over 100 years in the U.S. and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But
it reminds me, I'm not a sports and athletic person or anything, but I just had this picture in my mind of a football game and how a person is trying to get tackled and taken down, but the person just keeps shifting. They move to the left, they move to the right, they run around, and you can't catch them. So that's what happens.
Well, it's a good analogy, but it does, respectfully, it does fall apart when you consider that in that particular case, it's good at least for that team if he evades the tackle. And I guess, maybe the analogy doesn't break down because it's good for the pharmaceutical team if they can evade the tackle, at least in terms of their profits and so forth. But it has
depends on which team you're rooting for.
I guess you're right there. It's profoundly bad for the ethical concerns. But anyway.
This particular article that you've indicated, I thought it would be important to talk about the author because – did you read her bio? Her name is Christina England. And what kind of how she came to this conclusion and the long life struggle to get to this point of being an author and learning of being concerned about holistic medicine and what's going on in the vaccination world?
Sure. Tell us a little bit about Christina England, because she's been writing about the vaccine issue, I think, for probably some number of years now. And I will say briefly, Deb, that this is an article that is one of a series of articles that I've seen, and at least some of which I've posted at the Pandemic Response Project news page, about this polio issue. We did talk about that some last week, so I wanted to do a short version of the article. But the issue keeps coming up, and it's an important one. And this is the first article that had framed it in this site, even though we've talked about the same underlying issue, that doctors change names when vaccines don't work. But tell us about Christina England, because she's been out there for a while.
She was born and educated in London, the UK, so I guess her name fits her. And she left school to work in a children's library specializing in storytelling and book buying. In 1978, she changed her career to dedicate her time to caring for the elderly and was awarded the title of Caregiver of the Year for her work in 1980. After dedicating a lot of her spare time helping disabled children in special school, she worked in a respite unit in a leading teaching hospital. In 1990, Christina adopted the first of two disabled boys with the challenging behavior and complex disabilities and medical needs. In 1999, which is 9 years later, she was accused of Munchausen's by proxy disease after many failed attempts to get the boys' complex needs met. And this is something that probably many people have been suffering with. The accusations when their children have been damaged from vaccines or some other problem to their children's health. And because her boys had been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder and ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, as part of a complex tapestry. And you know what? When you see those live videos on YouTube of children who are suffering with the pains of these types of disorders, you can see that it's an unreal type of a world. These kids cannot communicate. They are restless. They have intestinal pain. They have difficulty eating. They're allergic to so many things. And so she had two kids like this that she had adopted. And during the assessments, Ms. Blakemore Brown discovered that through the foster care diaries that the eldest boy had reacted adversely to the mumps, measles, rubella vaccine, the MMR. And after taking A level in psychology and a BTEC in learning disabilities, Ms. Christina England spent many years researching vaccines and adverse reactions. So this is a woman who really wants to help people. She must be extremely intelligent, have incredible capabilities for learning and expressing herself. And she went on to gain an HND in journalism and media. So not only has she been a caregiver, studied medical arena and about what's going on with vaccinations and the kinds of disorders that occur, she now is an author in the media and currently writing for the American Chronicle, the weekly blitz, VacTruth, that must be VacTruth.org, and Namaste UK, all about immunization safety and efficacy. So this is a woman who really has lived a life of experience and is trying to be an advocate.
Well, Debbie, when you mix altruism with information and communication skills, you have a powerful force for good in the world. And it sounds, what you just described sounds exactly like that with Christina England. So we're certainly glad that she's doing the work that she's doing here.
Okay, so you want to tell us about what this recent article is about?
Well, this is just in some ways a repeat of what we've talked about recently on the show, but I think it's a point that bears some repetition because of how profound it is. And it's this notion that polio has been officially declared eradicated in India. And by the way, there are these 47,500 children who became paralyzed after getting the vaccines in India with a condition that is clinically indistinguishable from polio. But of course, they were vaccinated, so it's not polio. And by the way, this particular condition is more deadly than polio, but, you know, polio was eradicated. And it is just so bold, would be an understatement. And as we've said in the past, this is exactly what happened here in the U.S. They administered a vaccine. Polio had been declining on its own prior to that. And then suddenly we have this rapid increase in polio. And Ms. England points out and refers to a recently published commentary by Dr. Vera Scheibner in the, let me see if I can find what journal it was here, but a reputable medical journal where she refers to Dr. Scheibner, past studies showing polio occurring after different kinds of injections. Even people who had been injected with antibiotics had increased polio paralysis rates, but people who had been injected with pertussis vaccine prior to the introduction of the polio vaccine had polio. There were studies, I know from my own research, were studies in the U.S., England, and Britain that showed that prior to the polio vaccine, persons who had been vaccinated had something like four times the paralysis of non-vaccinated persons. And the paralysis would almost always occur in whatever limb had been vaccinated, the arm or leg or what have you. So there was research in the early polio vaccine days or pre-polio vaccine days. I think it was Romania, where they had a direct correlation between the rate and risk of polio paralysis and the injection of antibiotics. And it seemed like the more injections you had gotten within a certain period of time, the risk and rate of polio just multiplied. It was phenomenal. So there's been tremendous history of problems with polio vaccines. We're seeing it again right now or recently in India. And it keeps being presented in some, you know, completely different from what's really going on in a way that somehow, you know, it doesn't matter that there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. Everything we've done based on that is still okay. You know, it's that kind of mentality. It somehow it doesn't matter if it's false. If you just, you know, you're the authority, you can just keep saying it as if nothing happened.
Right. I also recommend that when folks go to this website, and I've posted the link to, and it's called VAC. Let me get to it again. VacTruth.com, it's not VacTruth.org, VacTruth.com, Your Child, Your Voice, that there are so far 22 comments to Christina England's article here on doctors change names of diseases when vaccines do not work. And the comments are just as pertinent as and give you insight and links into the things that she's talking about here. So, yes, you're right. They keep moving the target so that you cannot say scientifically they're changing the parameters and therefore their statistics are untrue.
Well, here it's a simple case of changing definitions in order to present the illusion that you want to present. And as one of the comments I see here talks about, this is what's proposed for autism right now. The see if I'm saying this right, DSM manual, the next version, the one that psychiatry folks that defines the different mental disorders and provides criteria so that practitioners can then properly diagnose. They want to redefine autism, which raises a host of questions, but for our purposes on this point right now, let's, you know, autism is rising really fast. Let's nip it in the bud, you know, now. Let's change the definition so those numbers will go away, you know.
Right. And so then, what are they redefining autism as?
Well, I don't have the details in front of me. I'm just responding to a comment here, but we can certainly look at that more in depth
right
soon if we'd like to do that. But let's move on, because as we always do, and always for the best of reasons and with the best of intentions, we there's always more to talk about than we get to.
Okay, what's next up?
Well, we've got a recent article from Mercola.com. The title of the article is Most Recalled Type of Drug Will Surprise You.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I keep up with Mercola to some extent and many other sources, and he loves to use lead-ins and titles that are teasers where he doesn't come right out and say what he is he's talking about here. And I just really didn't expect anything, and this would surprise me. You know, I'm in the alternative arena. But this one caught me by surprise. He was absolutely right. It did surprise me.
Okay.
As he points out in the beginning of the article, that there's an up-to-date list of recalled drugs that are available on the FDA's website, Food and Drug Administration. And he refers to an in-depth analysis conducted by GBI. I don't know if he says who that is, but research. They looked at the number of recalls for what are called biologics, which is anything that it involves human or animal tissue or protein or what have you, from 2007 to 2010. Oh, here it is. Biologics are drugs that contain an ingredient extracted from a biological source, such as cells from humans, animals, or microorganisms. So what they found was that the biologic recalls has significantly increased from 2004 to 2010, but those for vaccines and immunoglobulins were higher than any other drug classes. And immunoglobulins are proteins that serve the same function as antibodies. So, for example, somebody steps on a rusty nail, you really can't give them a tetanus shot and expect the shot to produce antibodies in a timely fashion if there's actually an infection that you're exposed to when you step on the nail. But they can give you immunoglobulin, which is actually like injecting antibodies rather than a vaccine that over some period of days or weeks will create or generate the antibodies, cause the antibody production. That's the theory, as I understand it, anyway.
In a way, to me, it's good news that they're recalling these, because it means that somebody's looking. I mean, if it just kept pushing out and no recalls, of course, they shouldn't put them out in the first place if they haven't been tested over at least a period of time, that they shouldn't put people's life and limb in danger. But thank God that they are making a recall.
Well, good if there's something that needs to be recalled, that it is being recalled. Bad that there's something that, for whatever combination of reasons, usually some sort of oversights or negligence or lack of adequate testing or what have you, needs to be recalled. But what is interesting to me as I read this is it stands in stark contrast to what I saw in the first several years of my investigation into the vaccine controversy. And that is, I would hear over and over again that even though adverse events would be documented, that no vaccine has ever been recalled. And I used to hear that over and over for years. And then finally there was a vaccine, the first one that I recall ever hearing about, that was recalled because it was causing intussusception with infants, blockage of the colon or other parts of the digestive system. And so they recalled that vaccine. And so this is rather fascinating to me. The recalls have been perhaps not noticed and reported within the alternative vaccine community, or at least if they have, I haven't seen didn't get those memos. But basically what the article says here, in kind of quick summary, is that from 2007 to 2010, there were 14 recalls for vaccines and 13 recalls for immunoglobulins. Variety of reasons. Some were because of serious adverse events. Some were because of things as innocuous as labeling errors, quality defects, which is defined here as including reduced level of potency, presence of contaminants such as glass particles.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot about that.
Who's minding the ship here? I mean, at least somebody's discovering
it. The thing is, this has happened more than once in the same manufacturer. So even though they get the recall, they continue the same poor oversight. And then also manufacturing defects are part of the reasons for recall. So as you were saying, the drug recalls are exponentially getting higher in the last number of years. And I guess perhaps that's because they're doing so many, creating so many vaccinations as opposed to the antibiotics as a means of prevention, supposedly, which is not really true, in my opinion, and cure. So the problem is the numbers of vaccines. Maybe that's why there's so many, and the fact that they just are not, they're just going through without really being tested fully.
Yeah, it's a real, it's hard to tell on the surface whether these increases, and there are a number of different trends over recent years. One is the growing number of recalls. Another is the steadily increasing percentage of peer-reviewed, published medical studies that are found to be fraudulent or have other severe problems, and they end up being withdrawn.
But once something is out there, you really have a hard time taking it back. That's an old piece of wisdom.
Can't unring the bell, you know, once it's there. And people will continue to refer to it or act based on it if they don't have the subsequent information about the problems with it. And that's, you know, it's, you cannot completely undo a wrong once it's put out there. You know, you may be able to ameliorate the damage, mitigate the damage, but you can't really... it's difficult to fully account for it.
And you can't take back the lives that have been damaged and the families' lives that have been damaged.
Well, yeah, and perhaps that's the – thank you for saying that, because that's really the most important part about all this. These are not sort of like philosophical concepts and ideas. There are real people suffering real harm and injury, in some cases death from pharmaceutical errors or mistakes, medical politics, and so forth. The other trend I just want to mention real briefly, you know, in accordance with all these other couple of things we just talked about, is the number and amount and total amount of criminal and civil fines that are levied against the pharmaceutical industry every year. It has really increased dramatically in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And we just saw, I think it was at the end of 2011, another record set where a single fine, and this was a combination criminal and civil fine, was $3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to add, you know, it's hard to tell on the surface whether all these trends we've just talked about are because the problematic behaviors are increasing or because enforcement is now better. Or what combination of the two, you know, what's really going on is not crystal clear in that regard. But my suspicion is the fact that it continues to go on and has gone on for so long at whatever level suggests that there's an amoral, if not immoral, profit-driven agenda behind the behaviors. In other words, if doing these things was not ultimately producing a net profit, then under pure business analysis, you wouldn't do it.
In a way, it's like legalized mafia. But let me throw out this one article that you had. Merck was ordered to pay $321 million in a criminal fine for improperly marketing its Vioxx painkiller. This was something that they did a decade ago, 10 years ago, but they were recently fined for this type of illegal activity. They were giving this marketing Vioxx for treatment of rheumatoid arthritis before it was even approved in 2002.
And disturbingly, after they had already been warned by the FDA.
And in 1999, it was approved as a painkiller, but it was withdrawn from the market in 2004 because instead of, as it reduced your pain, you were now having a heart attack and a stroke. So we could talk about homeopathy, and which we just did in the last hour, and suppression and palliation, and actually working ourselves into a more serious condition when we start to remove the pain just as a surface kind of a thing. And so they also had a related settlement reached in November. Merck agreed to pay more than $600 million to the federal government, 43 states, and the District of Columbia for a wider range of alleged improprieties.
Now, I see this a lot, Debbie, as I've looked at fines that the pharmaceutical industry gets hit with, that there's often a combination of criminal and civil fines, and usually the criminal fine is smaller than the civil fine, but often there are both connected with the same case. The other thing I see frequently is what you just pointed out, that the fines at the time that they are assessed and imposed are often dealing with behaviors that either are over a period of years or behaviors mm-hmm. that were actually occurred some years ago. And mm-hmm. if we're seeing right now, as in the last today and in very recent months and years, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, we're seeing this huge increase in the severity and rate and size of these fines, a lot of that is for past behavior. What does that say about what's going on behavior-wise right now?
Yeah.
That will be getting that they'll be getting fines for 5 years down the road, and and thinking in terms of trends in this healthcare arena generally, we had a conversation about this last week, where Dr. Andrew Wakefield had made a point that the recent increase in the rate of autism from the prior number of 1 in 110 to 1 in 88 is based on data about children who were 8 years old, who were born in 2000 or 2001 to 2008. This is data that was assessed 4 years ago, or mm-hmm. that was from 4 years ago, and given that autism has steadily increased now for a period of decades, it's reasonable to assume that since 2008, the rate of autism has continued to increase. We just won't have that data
mm-hmm.
For another 4 or 5 years. And so the actual current rate is probably significantly higher than 1 in 88.
Mm-hmm.
That is, of course, speculative, but it's very reasonable. I mean, is this increase going to plateau at some point, or is it just going to keep on going for years and years and years? And we don't know. We don't know.
Yeah, so I'm hearing you talk about this, and I think if you're a child psychiatrist or child psychologist, you know that you're taught as a parent, in order to help create this inner morality, inner ethics, and what is right and wrong in your child, what do you have to do? Immediately when they do something wrong, you have to give them an outcome, a consequence, a punishment, whatever it is, so that they relate the two. Now you're saying here in this instance, you're giving a punishment or a fine, which they've already earned multi-millions, billions, trillions of dollars from their misactivity, and now 10 years later you're giving them a slap on the wrist. So are they able to make the connection, the tie, and the consequence? Are the people who were involved in it 10 years ago having a repercussion that now they have to look inwardly and think of, what is it that I did wrong that I am punished? You see what I'm saying here? It's just a simple matter of child psychology.
It is on one level, and if some CEOs were sent to jail for their failure to adequately deal with these problems, if some of the decision makers, the responsibility people, the people who basically are the ones profiting from the criminal and other civil liabilities, civil violations, I think we might see some change in the behavior. I think that change, the tendency to respond to that would not be a complete about face. It's just that, if you get caught doing something wrong, there's two things you can do. You can stop doing it, or you can try to be more covert about how you do it so you don't get caught again. So I don't think it would end it, but I think it would have a dampening effect on it.
Right.
But clearly, this is not limited to one or two companies. There's just a long list of companies that have, and fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars are common. There are plenty of fines that are smaller than those. But that is not unusual at all to see what we just talked about, fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars. There, and many, many, many different companies falling prey to this. So whatever combination of reasons is giving rise to all of this, the fact is it is happening, appears to be getting worse. There's a serious systemic problem here. And it has profound implications for vaccines, among other things, because it suggests, you know, that same mentality seems to pervade the entire pharmaceutical industry. Going however far you need to go to maximize profits, even if it means criminal behavior, even if it means paying a fine once in a while, there is a lack of ethics and morality in the disturbing and profound lack of ethics and morality in the conducting of pharmaceutical business.
Right. So,
and
you know
it,
what?
And far-reaching implications.
I also feel that numbers, we kind of have a difficulty with comprehending the extent of the numbers that we hear, that they get so out of whack, they get so huge, that it's hard for us to even imagine what it means. And in the same way, I'm going to go back to the Mercola article that we just talked about. The most recalled type of drug will surprise you, that these vaccines or the recalls for the vaccines, the numbers are just so incredible. We saw that in 2007 to 2010, there were 14 recalls for vaccines. And then he gives us a number from 2008 to 2009, 426 recalls went up to 1,742. And he says this is an increase of 309% in 1 year. So it just boggles the mind that there can be this dramatic shift in the number of recalls. What's going on? Are the oversight committees finding more things or clamping down or taking more action? Or were there always this number of medical supplements that are being, vaccines or whatever it is, being put out to the people, and we just never saw these recalls happening?
Well, I'll tell you some of what may be going on, and this is somewhere within the realm, fuzzy realm of educated guess. Some of what may be going on is the fact that we've had, first of all, well, now more than a couple of decades ago, we had the introduction of legislation that substantially removed liability from the vaccine manufacturers for the harm from their products. But we had a recent Supreme Court case that took the interpretation of that federal law a step further. And in simple layman's terms, that case all but absolutely removes, it virtually absolutely removes liability, probably in many people's opinion, contrary to the intent of Congress when they enacted this law in the first place. So in other words, it was hard before to hold them liable for the harm from their products. It's even harder now. And you've got, I had a figure from a couple of years ago that there were more than 330 vaccines either on the market in development. I just read another figure this morning that's maybe it's a more recent figure, that there was something on the order of 365 or more vaccines in development. There's no light at the end of this tunnel. Every man, woman, and child on the planet is a potential recipient of hundreds of vaccines from the moment of birth throughout their entire life. And pharmaceutical companies around the world are seeing the potential for billions and billions in profits, and the kind of endless, you know, the number of vaccines that could potentially be developed and created is limited only by somebody's imagination of what you might use a vaccine for. You know, I didn't even know there were 330 infectious diseases. Well, they're not all for infectious diseases, of course, but many things that you would never think of as something that a vaccine could even relate to, you know, obesity or heart disease or whatever. If you can think of it, there's somebody developing a vaccine for it. And so it's just a free-for-all, a pharmaceutical free-for-all. Here in the U.S., at least, no liability, and you can get the, you know, the system is in place now to get laws passed relatively easily requiring every new vaccine that comes along.
And is there a monopoly as to who are the manufacturers of these vaccines?
The last information I had on that was that there were about five, and this is from a couple of years ago, there were about five primary vaccine manufacturers here in the U.S. But I have read articles recently where Asian, I think Chinese in particular, manufacturers are now coming into the vaccine market or trying to work their way into the market. They want to provide cheaper vaccines. They probably can produce them less expensively than we can here in the States. So they're going to be competing. So it's a huge, again, it's an enormous market. You're going to see competition in this field increasing. That's a little scary to me because to the extent that governments are buying vaccines, they're going to tend to want to go with the less expensive ones. And the less expensive ones, by virtue of being less expensive, says to me at least the possibility of not the same level of care and scrutiny in the production or quality in the production. And that's not a given, but it certainly is a possibility.
I'm very wary of even buying garlic in the grocery store that says comes from China. You know, we've had over the years the milk problems, the contamination of our food products that come over here, the packaged and canned goods, the just so and furniture manufactured there, and clothing and all toys, all of the different things that are coming from that region of the world. Who is really overseeing it? And even isn't, I saw Apple has been having some problems there with the treatment of the employees. So,
yes.
So there's a lot of news coming out of China that we have to take very cautiously what we accept.
Well, any vaccine used in the United States, it has to be first licensed by the FDA. So I presume they'd have to get through FDA licensure, whether the vaccine is manufactured locally or abroad. But the way politics works, as you and I know, Debbie, it's often not what it pretends to be on the surface. And so who knows who's going to be making what deals with who and under what conditions behind the scenes. Or who has what influence where, and what, you know, that says about the end product. But the vaccine manufacturers right now here in the U.S. have no incentive. In fact, this Mercola article talks about disincentive to look to see whether there's any problems or to find out if there's any problems with their vaccines. And the liability is just not there, and it's a huge, huge ethical problem. I think we're about out of time, though, it looks like.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Do you want me to extend our time?
Why don't we come to as polished and smooth a closing here as we can. But
I think we're ending. We have 90 seconds left. I guess we're going to pick up where we left off in the next show. And I thank everyone for listening. Please share it, tweet it, put it on Facebook. Give Alan a call. He can answer your questions. And I'm going to sign off with your song.
Okay. Take care, Debbie.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Let your peace be observed. Walk by walk. allow our souls to shine. Reaching for the greater love and healing for mankind. Share your light, let your love be unfurled. One by one, we are changing the world. It takes an act of loving will to cause change to be. So light your inner candle and never guard its flame. And as its radiance grows bright into the world, it will proclaim. Share your light, let your truth be unfurled. One by one, we are free. Share your light, let your truth be unfurled. One by one, we are creating the world.